challenges are is to stick to your routine, because it's a little different, right? It's, you know, planes, trains, automobiles, all that stuff. And then you got to really wire in to doing your job, you know. So whatever your prep is on Monday, today, you know, Tuesday, Wednesday, all the way through the week, you got to keep that the same, you know, because there's going to be other things that go on. And I'm going to have a meeting with the players once they get in here about that. And to me, it's about staying with your routine. Whatever time you go to bed at the same time. Don't change it. And you got to make sure you're doing that. And we have to do that as a group.
Mully at Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. That's Matt Eberflus talking yesterday. I'm very curious, what does that mean? Is he saying whatever time you go to bed in America?
No,
get
I don't
on
think
the
so.
Same time frame
I think
when
what,
you're
no,
in England?
I think it's the opposite. I think what he's trying to say is that
pretend you don't, you're not in England.
The reason that they left last night and arrived this morning, presumably, is that they get today off, and then tomorrow is the beginning of the work week. That's their Monday, essentially, right?
Yes.
So treat your Monday, treat your work day according to the same routine. Like tonight, if you go to bed typically at 10 o'clock on a Tuesday in Chicago or Lake Forest, you go to bed 10 o'clock in London.
These are 23-year-olds.
I know. And, I mean, but I think that's what he's asking for.
You and I might go to bed at 10 o'clock. I don't think they are.
Well, if you see a lot of players, you know, who do sleep studies, and they are trying to take care of themselves better. But okay, let's say midnight. Midnight. Yeah.
So go to bed at midnight tonight in London.
Yes.
Okay.
And try to replicate your routine so you have the same kind of results if you have the same kind of regimen.
Yeah. The idea is to get yourself acclimated to the different time zone as quickly as possible and have a longer period of time so that you're going to bed at midnight on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and you play.
And getting there earlier in the week allows you time to adapt your body clock to that new regimen or schedule or the changes in your rhythms. And I think that is what a lot of teams study and do. Other teams have done it the opposite way. They've had mixed results. So I think there's no tried and true method, but this is the one that Matt Eberflus, who likes to cling to convention, is going to try. I think it's probably the smartest way. It's the way that I would want to go. You give your team a little bit more time to prepare. You don't have to worry about anybody having, you know, travel issues. If you didn't sleep on a plane, whatever the case is, by Sunday, it will all be football. You just want to make it a football experience. That's all.
Yeah, I think it's fascinating that in this case, that you have a team in Jacksonville that does this trip all the time. Now, they're going for 2 weeks, right? Because they're playing a game here against the Bears on Sunday, and then they're staying there and playing, I believe it's the Patriots, the following Sunday. So theirs is a little bit different because they're going for whatever. They're going through whatever, 10 days, 11 days. But I find it weird that they would just go in Thursday night and try to power through a game on Sunday as opposed to doing what the Bears are doing. Like I would prefer, I think you're right. I think having traveled, and I know you have too, to that part of the world quite a bit, I think that, you know, there's one of two ways of handling it, which is never get off your own time frame. And the last time I was in London, it was superb. I did our show from there, and it was so awesome because it's like instead of having to be at work at 5 in the morning, you got to be at work at 11. And, you know, you could get up, you could eat, you could take the tube to the office and, you know, be ready and prepared and have 6 newspapers read before you even start working, you know, get on the internet, look everything up. It was just, it was so great. It was fantastic. But I never really got off my schedule the entire time I was there.
Yeah, I think the Bears probably will get off their schedule a little bit. And that's the way you have to.
Yep.
It just depends on your taste. The Jaguars are having a bigger disruption to their season and their schedule by going abroad for 2 straight games. That's an odd thing to agree to. But if your franchise is in the state they're in, maybe that's part of the reason why. I'm not quite sure. The Bears can't worry about anybody else's schedule or circadian rhythms or anything like that. They just have to worry about getting themselves in the right frame of mind, body and mind. And I think to be able to say that on Sunday, whatever time they kick it off, they're ready to play as if it were noon on the lakefront at Soldier Field.
And I think it's really good for the Bears that they're playing a team that is kind of in the situation that Jacksonville is, a team that is struggling to start the season, that is has one win already. They're, you know, the Bears, by being 3-2, are in a position to compete for a playoff spot. That changes your season. It changes the way you feel about going to work and what you're doing. And if they can win this game and they can get to the break at 4-2, they'll be feeling really confident and good about themselves moving forward, as opposed to a team that has one win that it's basically already eliminated. I know that's a crazy
Well, they've already fired their coach in their head.
Yes.
And I think that he maybe Doug Peterson has lost that locker room based on reports.
Yep.
We don't know much more than what we read, but what you see is a team that's really struggling. They pull out a big win against the Colts, 37-34. So there is a little bit of a morsel of hope in Jacksonville, but that team is reeling right now. They're not meeting expectations. Meanwhile, the Bears, this is really a credibility test. I think you go into this game, and if you win it and you go into the bye 4-2, you justify the expectations that you came into the season with. You can say at the break, regardless of how you got there, you're 4-2, and you're ready to take a deep breath and then begin the tougher part of your schedule, and you're legitimately feeling like you're in the playoff hunt. If you lose, then it's going to feel like more of the same. We have seen this before. The Bears kind of tease us with a little bit of potential, but they're really not the team that has arrived yet. So if you lose this game, that's where we are. And that's why it is a big game. It isn't as big of a must win as last week or the last 2 weeks may have felt, but it is a big one.
Well, and I think the other element here is that when you think about where the Bears are at playing a team like Jacksonville, that's not a great team. That is not, you know, I heard Flusie talk about how it's about us and what we do. We have to execute. We know we'll have a game plan designed for the opponent, but it's about us and it's about our execution and how we play. And that's an easy thing to say when your opponent is 1-3, 1-4. If you are actually playing against an unbeaten, if you're playing against a team that offers you all sorts of problems, of a team that might, like, let's say, for instance, someone like Baltimore, where the quarterback can do a couple different things and keep you kind of uneven and uncertain, the Chiefs, then that's a much harder thing to only worry about yourself and how you're operating, because you got to be prepared for that opponent. And it's lucky that they can afford to worry about themselves as opposed. And I know people will say, oh, you only worry about it. No, you don't. You got to be able to stop some of the things that certain opponents are going to do. And I don't think that this is a team that puts the fear of God in you like some other NFL teams would.
I think it's fair. I think it's two schools of thought there. And I think there also are two ways that the Bears apply it. Offensively, you've got to be able to adapt and watch the tape and be willing to adjust, because you're not at the point offensively, and Caleb Williams isn't at the point offensively where you can dictate the terms of the way you play. You're not good enough on the ground. You're not good enough at any position offensively, schematically or otherwise, to say we're going to go in there and you adjust to us. I agree with you. You have to be able to say, yeah, the opponent does matter. Defensively, I understand that mentality. I understand why the Bears would say, I don't care who we're playing. Defensively, we're not going to change the way that we approach this. We're going to stay in our fronts. We're going to come with our blitzes. We're going to get to the quarterback, and we're going to create some turnovers. We may give up more ground yards on the ground than we would like at times, but this bend don't break philosophy has been working to the point where the last 10 games, no team has scored more than 21 points. So defensively, you do dictate the terms. Offensively, I think you got to be more adaptable.
Yeah, I think the Bears defense, you know, the best thing about this from a Bears perspective is the concept that defense travels, right? So you go and you play a team that it doesn't have a similar defense to yours. So it's going to be an interesting game. The Bears have figured out how to play complementary football. They understand, first and foremost, that they got a really good defense and that that defense isn't going to be given up 30 points a game, right? That's a defense that just held an opponent to 10 points, albeit allowing the first touchdown of the game and then shutting them down. But that's a really good thing to have a strong defense that you can rely on. And then you know going into the game that, hey, we got three stud wide receivers. We got a couple tight ends that we like. We like our running game the way it's been working of late, where we feel like we're getting the ball to our running back, and then we've got a special power package. When that comes up, we figured that part out. And then meanwhile, you know, the running back also can help in the passing game. It just feels like they've got ways of moving the ball. They got a kicker that they can believe in. They got a punter who can flip the field, and they can play a field position game. It takes a lot of pressure off of their offense to produce tons of points when you have a defense that's capable of shutting someone down.
No doubt, and that's the good news about this Bears season, is that everything is built around the defense, and four, five games in, we're still with that reality. Now comes the fun part, because you have – an offense that where there are expectations, and they maybe have adjusted them slightly because of, for a lot of reasons, but you got a new offensive coordinator learning his personnel, an offensive line that is in a state of flux. Let's face it, you didn't expect to be without Nate Davis five games in for whatever reason. Tevin Jenkins has been spotty in and out of the lineup. So you have an offensive line that is kind of still working its way into shape. Where does Ryan Bates fit into the equation? Where does Larry Borum fit into the equation?
He may be a guy you use at guard. Who knows?
Well,
before it's all said and done.
You need to keep these options open, and that's not a great way to look at it with your offensive line. You never want to be making those kinds of changes in season, but it is what it is, as they say, and so you've got to make the best of a difficult situation. If you're Matt Eberflus, if you're Shane Waldron, if you're Chris Morgan, this offensive line was better against the Panthers, but it was the Panthers. So when they have a historically bad defense, I don't know how much you take out of that, except for at least you didn't blow it and you protected Caleb Williams a little bit better than you had been protecting him.
Yeah, I mean, listen, they're going to have to do all that stuff. They're going to have to do it. They're going to have to take care of the quarterback. They're going to have to be aware of you know, they got to knock off the penalties, right? I mean, they still had a couple penalties. They were weird ones. But they had 10 penalties the game before. They had 5 penalties last time out. They still had more penalties than their opponent on Sunday, but none of them really impacted the game. You know, you had a weird clipping call that took away a touchdown, but that wasn't the end of the world, because you had a good flow in that game and you had enough points, and that wasn't the reason. That was not going to impact the ability to win or lose the game. But, you know, you'd like to score more and you'd like to keep that going. I do think that it's a real luxury to only worry about yourself. And I don't believe it's a philosophy that will work week in and week out against the better teams in the league. You've got to be able to game plan against people, stop people, figure out ways to take away what they do best to keep them from kind of taking advantage of whatever the things are that they want to do. And because your opponent isn't stellar, you have a chance to only worry about yourself. It's a life lesson, I suppose.
So let people know that Jaquan Brisker, if they're just waking up, the news last night, not good. He did not make the trip to London. He is tied with T.J. Edwards for most tackles on the Bears with 40 this season. So
concussion protocol.
It would be a big loss if he does not play in this game because of a concussion protocol. It is his third straight season that he is in concussion protocol. And I don't know. Well, I do know. That's not good, because I think the history is something that you can take into account when you're considering how quickly to return him to play.
Dumb question, warning. Are you allowed to travel with a concussion? I mean, I know you – I have personally traveled with a concussion. I'm saying, do they frown upon it in the NFL Is there anything?
I think that's part of the reason he didn't make the trip.
Head cold, yes. You're not supposed to.
No.
I'm just wondering if that's part of this element. He could arrive later in the week and play.
Well, he could.
But
yeah,
you know, when a guy doesn't make the trip, your thought is, okay, we got to move on, and he's not going to start. He's missed games before.
Well, he's missed games because of concussions before.
I don't think that you're going to necessarily lose the game because your starting safety isn't there. I think you want to be all hands on deck, and I think you would prefer to have everyone capable of playing.
Well, that's interesting because if you start to look at most valuable,
yes,
impactful players in the secondary, where does Jaquan Brisker rank if you go against a quarterback like Trevor Lawrence, who, you know, isn't what maybe we thought he would be, but he's still a dangerous passer? Oh, how much will you miss Jaquan Brisker if he doesn't play? Is his defense so good that you can absorb the loss of your leading tackler in the secondary?
All right, we should answer that question when we come back from the break. 312-644-6767. Mully and Hall on the Score.
Third down and 12. Dalton, 6 of 7 for only 8 yards in the air so far today. Over the top, it's complete to Tremble.
Fumble!
Lost it. Bears recovered. Knocked loose by Jaquan Brisker. And then recovered by Dexter.
Kenny, that was a big league hit. Jaquan Brisker, bam, puts it right on Tommy Tremble. Tommy Tremble is still down. He lets go of that ball immediately. And Jaquan Brisker, one of those physical safeties, comes from Penn State. We were just talking about them. James Franklin coaching him up. And he's now playing for the Bears, doing a great job.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. So how much do you miss him if he can't play? Is he an irreplaceable player for the Bears as a member of that secondary, as a last line of defense? How do you rank him versus other players that could possibly miss a game?
I don't think he's ahead of Jalen Johnson in terms of being indispensable.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he's ahead of Montez Sweat in terms of being indispensable.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, you do have experience playing without Jaquan Brisker in recent seasons. Jonathan Owens is a capable backup if he's the guy they turn to, and they, you know, have the interchangeable parts with Kevin Byard, who's having a good season. So
he's, yes, a good player, man.
He's a very good, yep, player. He's an above average player. You would miss his physicality, you'd miss his run support, you'd miss his ability to blitz from the secondary. I don't think that you would have a different projection for the defense against the Jaguars than with or without him. And I think they could still beat the Jaguars and really dominate them defensively without Jaquan Brisker. But he does make a very good defense potentially great. And you don't like to see this in terms of the third straight season with him missing time or going into concussion protocol, because that was a nasty collision.
Yeah, it was a nasty collision.
And you hope both guys recover from it. And the Bears, that game at the time was 14-7. The Panthers had the football, and then the Bears went down and scored. But that was a pivotal point in Sunday's game, and Jaquan Brisker turned that game around.
Yeah, they. It was a really big play because it was a turnover, and they scored after that, and it changed the game. There's no shadow of a doubt that it's a field position play. It's a sudden change play, I would think that the way the Bears are playing right now, and I'm not sort of diminishing his impact on this team, but I would think based on the way they played, you know, Andrew Billings might be as important a player on their defensive line as there is, just because, mm-hmm, I'm not sure you have a replacement for him. And frankly, Jervon Dexter has played really well. I don't want to sit here and rank players and say that, you know, well, you thank God this guy's not hurt because this guy's hurt. You hope he can play, and you hope he's okay. More than anything else, you hope he's okay. But if he can play, great. But if he can't, and if the wiser move is to give him a couple of weeks off, that doesn't damage you. It doesn't change the way. Are you without a starter? Yes. But does that change your pick? Let's put it that way.
No, I would not rush him back.
Right.
And I wouldn't think that the Bears would ever do that, hopefully. And I believe that they are in a position where they don't have to feel that sense of desperation. And even if they did, I would hope they would do the right thing. Jaquan Brisker does not want to get in a point where this becomes a chronic thing or any more chronic than it has become. Three straight seasons of entering concussion protocol is not common. And you look around the NFL, and certainly there is a car crash on every play, but it's not common to have a player with that kind of concussion history, which is alarming. So I understand why people look at that hit and they say, wow, that is what you love about the NFL. And it's violent as any hit you'll see. He absorbed the hit as much as he inflicted it. And I think that's why you see both guys having repercussions from it, because Tommy Tremble was reportedly, New York Post this morning is reporting that
unconscious.
He was presumed to be unconscious temporarily. Then he walked off the field under his own power.
Right.
And Jaquan Brisker is being lauded for being the kind of the physical hit that, you know, makes people go, wow. And it's one of those NFL type of collisions that does make you say, wow. You just hope both guys are okay. And from a Bears perspective, they are in a position. They have a luxury. The secondary is probably their deepest position. So they have guys that they trust, guys who can capably fill that role. And you're right about Andrew Billings. They don't really have a duplicate part.
Yeah.
And they do have probably more of a duplicate part in Jonathan Owens replacing Jaquan Brisker if that's the route they go.
All right. We got a lot of people who want to check in. 312-644-6767. We'll start with Jeff. Jeff is listening on the Odyssey app. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. David, my apologies for yesterday for giving you shade about Ball State. Coming from Kalamazoo, which is 150 miles from Chicago and 150 miles from Detroit, I am a lifelong Chicago sports fan. My wife is a lifelong Detroit sports fan. So I see a lot of Tigers games here. What you're seeing with the Tigers is a team that sold during the trade deadline because they didn't think they were going to win, but they've always had a development of young pitching staff, which Tarek Skubal was not supposed to be the key point of that, but he turned out to be. So they have a great young pitching staff. But in that time after they sold off, they've been winning a lot of games in the late innings, probably from youthful exuberance or ignorance, because they don't believe that, you know, they're out of any game. And that might be because of the manager. We did not get AJ Hinge. They are definitely a team to reckon with because of their pitching staff. They don't score a lot of runs, but they, like I said, they always believe they're in every game. The Class A thing from yesterday, he made the cardinal mistake of giving a major league hitter the same pitch three pitches in a row, which was not his best pitch, and he hung a slider, and he paid for that. Finally, go Hawks. Beat the Storm and Mormons tonight, and I look forward to listening to the rest of your guys' day.
Hey, thanks, Jeff.
Thanks, buddy. Thanks,
appreciate
Jeff.
The phone call and the apology. No offense taken.
No, you were hurt.
I was wounded.
Chirp, chirp.
Chirp, chirp. Tough. Tough season for the Cardinals. I think his point about the Tigers is a good one. You give credit to AJ Hinch. It's a relatively anonymous group of baseball players that have come back from being 10 games out, 101 games in to the season, and that's his historically good climb. I also think the credit often gets placed at the feet of AJ Hinch, and he deserves it because he's a great manager. But Mully, remind people, Scott Harris is the president of baseball operations in Detroit. And he came from the Cubs. You know, he spent some time with the Cubs back in 2018, 2019 under Theo Epstein in that regime. And then he went to the Giants, did some things there, and now he's really turned the Tigers around. I don't know if it's enough to say you look at the Royals, you look at the Tigers, and you find hope on the South Side. I don't want to make that leap. But it will give teams, not necessarily like the White Sox, because the White Sox are kind of in their own category.
Yeah.
But it will give teams around baseball the hope that their young players can develop at a pace where they can flirt with the idea of getting to the playoffs.
Yeah, the Sox won 41 games.
I'm putting them in their own category.
And I am just kind of I just don't wish to revisit the horrors of the baseball season.
They have. I'm going to put an asterisk, okay?
Okay.
Asterisk next to the White Sox. Everybody, the White Sox who missed the playoffs have a young talent. They look at what the Royals are doing.
Yeah.
They look at what the Tigers have done, and they see, well, why can't we be next?
I was just going to say, thank God you didn't compare the White Sox to the Royals, because the Sox have done far too much of that.
Well, when they have a prospect that reminds me of Bobby Witt Jr., I may do that, but tell me when that happens.
Well, your guy, Colson Montgomery, is out in the Arizona Fall League.
I'm taking a lot of shade this week.
How is that shade? I'm just saying.
Your guy.
Well, he's your guy.
All right.
And so is Ballesteros from the Cubs. They're playing out in that, if you want to make
in the Arizona Fall League?
Yeah.
Let's go.
I know. I'm
show
all for
trip.
It. Yeah.
Scorehouse.
Byron is in Peoria. Hey, Byron.
Hey guys, how you doing?
Good.
Good. Hey, enjoy listening to you guys every morning. You make my morning day start off great.
So, bless you, buddy.
Hey, just a quick question. I don't know if this was a fashion statement or a fingernail polish job got botched, but I noticed Kayla was wearing a glove on his non-throwing hand on Sunday, and I don't know if that was to prepare him for the upcoming cold weather, but it certainly wasn't cold on Sunday. And I don't know if you guys noticed that or if there was an explanation for that.
Well, I think players wear gloves for various reasons. Maybe it helps with his grip. I'm not quite sure. I don't think it has anything to do with his fingernail polish, which clearly bothers the caller.
It's a lot colder here than it is in L.A.
I don't think it's
that
either.
But he's originally from Washington. So
why did he throw in the nail polish stuff?
I don't know what you're talking
about. Why did he throw in the nail polish stuff? Why do you think?
Because he was talking about the man wearing a glove.
Okay.
I
think the purpose of that was, yes, to ask a question about the glove, but to throw some shade at Caleb Williams for painting his nails.
Maybe he couldn't get in for his appointment, and so he was embarrassed on how they look, so he put a glove over it.
Couldn't get in for a mani. You think that Caleb Williams would have a hard time getting a manicure in Chicago?
I was just trying to be funny.
Yeah, that's good.
Sorry.
That's good. No, it's good.
Dustin's attempt at humor.
That's Dustin telling us that he doesn't like the nail polish either.
No, that's you telling everybody that I don't like the nail polish either.
All right, I'm sorry.
He was concerned about chipping.
I've been on that for a while.
He was very concerned about chipping.
Have I been on that?
No, I don't think. I think Dustin has in the past mentioned the nail polish in relation to the Notre Dame nail polish.
Thank you.
That's all that he really cares about.
The message.
That's
the message.
Thank you. All right. I'm sorry if I misinterpreted that.
No, that's okay.
I'm big enough to apologize.
He deserves it.
Yeah,
there's nothing wrong with that.
No, but I did notice that Caleb did wear a glove on his left hand, and his right hand, obviously the throwing hand, was bare, and that's good. I do want to address this, and maybe we could talk to Dave Wanstead, who has plenty of experience here.
With manicures.
Not with manicures, no.
I'm sorry.
With playing in the elements. The most concerning thing I heard on Monday, and I don't know if the concern is overstating it. It likely is.
The wind?
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't understand why we're talking about the wind in early October in Chicago. In a month where it's been ideal.
It swirls down in the lakefront.
It does. Welcome to town.
If you're a kicker, you need to be aware of it.
Well, Cairo Santos missed an extra point, might have had something to do with it. But don't tell me on a down and out on the first play of the game that you're not aware of the wind and that.
So
really,
you threw a potential pick six because it was windy.
Yes.
Okay.
Are you buying that?
No. No, that was a bad throw.
It was a bad throw. Did it have anything to do with the wind? Maybe. But are we on? I don't want to. I guess I did rail against it, but I think that it seems hard to accept that the conditions, which seem to be ideal on Sunday for everyone else, that would contribute to what could have been a pick six and what was a limiting of in the passing game because they weren't going to throw in that direction.
Yeah.
Just seemed like an odd thing to bring up.
I think it's interesting that became a story.
Last week, Jed Hoyer was talking about Wrigley. The wind's blowing in all season long. This week, it's Caleb and Flusie talking about the winds knocking down and outs.
In fairness, the numbers do show that the wind was blowing in most of the season at Wrigley. There was definitely an impact.
Okay. Thank you,
wind.
Tom Skilling.
And we did discuss that in season. We did talk about the numbers at Wrigley were different than they had been. So I'm just trying to be fair and balanced, you, as you know I'm renowned to be.
I know you are renowned to be that. I'm sorry that I'm unfair and imbalanced.
Well, no, you're implying that they had made up
Dustin
all
this after
stuff.
Me now. Now you're after me.
No, I'm
going to get some coffee.
I am your dear friend, and I hold you in highest esteem. I'm merely saying, and when you ask me.
Jeff's going to call back and insult Ball State.
And you asked me about what was bothersome. I said, oh, yeah, the wind story.
Okay.
I knew exactly where you were going. It was just weird that
it was.
Because, you know, you want to know about the wind? Just stay tuned. Give it another month, and we'll see how bad the wind is.
Yes. No
one is. Dave is correct. Coach Wanstead is here with us. We're going to get to him in a second. No one will ever say, well, you know, the wind was bad at the lakefront. I mean, I agree. But with the Cubs, it did blow in, and it did seemingly prevent. Now, what I'd like to know is, has any of the building, I don't mean buildings,
don't
but
know.
Building,
you're talking.
Whether it's scoreboards or new video boards, has any of that changed the dynamic of the field?
You're talking about a lot of hot air.
It's a lot of hot air. Thank you, buddy. All right. We got Coach Wanstead. He's with us next. Molly and Haw, the score.
Dave Wanstead, Bears head coach for six seasons.
The Bears.
The Bears.
Super Bowl champion.
How about them Cowboys?
Yeah!
He has the greatest mustache you've ever seen.
Some say it's a symptom of manliness. Others a cause. The mustache.
Why don't you hang it out with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Open up the door. It's Dave.
Who?
Dave. D-A-V-E.
Dustin, we're not going to waste airtime on that, okay?
Thank you.
Next question.
Thank you.
Next question.
Thank you
next
very
question.
Much.
Dave Wanstead.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Always a delight to talk to Coach Wanstead. He's with us here in studio. And Dave, good morning. How you holding up?
I'm good. Yes, absolutely. It's all good. Boy, you know, good win last week. Just kind of waiting out this hurricane, to be honest with you.
Oh, boy.
Seeing if we're going to get crushed or dodge it or just
wow.
We don't know yet. Yeah, this could be a bad one if we get hit. I might be moving into my condo here in Chicago full time.
How do you monitor that? Just like everybody else, kind of waiting to see weather reports?
I mean, I've got guys down there that we got the house all blocked off and
boarded
stuff
up.
Picked up and cars are gone. You know, so I mean, you do everything you can do and then you just, see where it hits. And
did you get any of Helene?
No, nothing.
Okay, good.
That which was crazy. Yeah, we dodged that one, but it's been.
And this one's supposed to be worse, right?
Yeah,
this one's going. But it's been rain. Here's half the problem. It's been raining for 4 days, so the ground, which normally would absorb and suck in all this water, it's just floating there now. So
yeah.
I mean, it's and then it comes down to the big thing is tide. I mean, are you getting the surge at high tide or low tide? In Naples, it's a difference of 3 feet.
Holy God!
So Now, if it hits at Tampa, up that area, I mean, by the time it gets to us, I would think we'd be okay, you know? That's a far away.
Hope so. Hope for the best, something like that, for everyone involved. So, Dave, speaking of the weather, what did you make of our conversation about the wind at Soldier Field
Sunday? I was amused hearing you and Molly go back and forth and make some points. I mean, that's...
Is it a factor in October? I mean, did you think it was on Saturday or Sunday with the passing game?
It seemed like it was a factor every week to me, to be honest with it. You know, I mean...
With the field goal kicking, for sure.
Yes.
I mean, it is definitely a big deal.
You're right. And, I never realized it as much because it really wasn't in Dallas or any other place where I really played as much as Chicago. And I remember playing the Giants 1 year, and they were, in field goal range by the numbers. And Dan Reeves was a coach, and Dan didn't kick the field goal. He went for it. It was like 4th and 3. And after the game, oh, God, the media, everybody was, you can't believe he made that decision. And he said, I was down on the field, and I watched our kicker kick into the wind.
Yeah.
And he didn't feel good about it, and I didn't feel good about making that field goal into the wind, so we went for it. It was a very honest, simple answer, but But from a fan's perspective and media perspective, boy, they could not couldn't digest it.
There aren't the same kind of quirks to stadia that there used to be. So, for instance, when you were down at Dallas, there used to be a crown on that field.
Right.
And you would see teams come down there, and they would often float ball. It was sometimes hard to get used to.
There's more variance. So, right.
Yes.
Yes.
But now it seems like
it's
a lot of
standard.
That is gone.
Yeah.
So talking about the wind is amazing.
It is interesting.
I got a great wind story for you. So we get on to play the Dolphins. I don't know what year it was, 94, my second year, I think, here. So I'm standing on the sideline, and the Dolphins had not lost to an NFC team since like 88 with Don Shula and Marino and all those guys. So we go rolling down there, and Eric was hurt, so Steve Walsh was our quarterback. And I'm standing talking to Coach Shula on the sidelines. And Steve, God bless him, he's got championship rings all over the place. He's trying to throw an out. It's just warm-ups. He's trying to throw an out to Conway or somebody. And I'm standing on the sidelines talking to Shula, and honest to God, I'm looking, and he's talking to me, and I'm saying, watch yourself, Coach. Watch your head. And that ball flies over Coach Shula's head. And he looks, wait. So then we're standing there 2 minutes later, and Steve throws another one. And I got to step in front of it and knock the ball down. And Don Shula turns to me and says, Dave, what the hell is going on here? And I said, well, Coach, we're just trying to get our quarterback warmed up. And he looks down at the other end of the field, and Marino, it's like a sniper shooter. Right?
Big difference.
Boom, 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 And he's looking at me trying to figure out. But he did. He says, Dave, what the hell's going on here? I said, Coach, it's our warm-up. It's windy. It was going to be a thunderstorm. It was an afternoon game. And I said,
it's funny.
And we win the game.
Yeah.
The Big Cat, I think, got a hand on a field goal at the end, and we won the football game.
Was that the game? Was there a game that was canceled because of the wind, because of some storm, and the playoffs were going on? Didn't you have to stay
the
next
day? Yeah, that was.
Is that a different one?
That was a different one. Okay. That was a different one. Yeah.
I don't want to diminish the effect.
I covered that game, dude. That's hysterical.
Don't want to diminish the effect the wind had on Sunday. I really don't. We're bringing it to attention because they talked about it. But I just wonder if you're talking about it in October, how much are you going to be using the elements as a home field advantage
it's
in December?
Yeah, it's like you're using it as a
if it's a crutch now.
Excuse.
Well, yeah.
Both of you guys, you're both saying the same thing. It's a fact. It's going to be a fact. But it's really not something that, in my mind, makes a difference unless you're going for a field goal or not field goal. But as far as the quarterback, if it's windy, don't throw the ball. That would be my thought. Just run it. But don't tell us about it later. Because really, it's kind of like injuries. At the end, nobody remembers and nobody really cares.
True.
All right. We'll be right back with Coach Wattstedt, Mullion Hall on the Score.